It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
Man, I was really hyped to start this podcast with the whole, no more layups bit from CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. And, I was going to play that audio to death in this podcast, just like I did with the Harden Giannis clip after the Bucks win, and the Rockets really went out there and lost this game 110-102, their first loss in the Disney bubble. What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your dejected host, slightly dejected today, although not completely dejected, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course our show is also available on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a huge favor, drop us a review, subscribe to the podcast, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So, all things considered, by now you should know me. I'm not going to sugarcoat this loss. I try not to sugarcoat the losses. That's just not who I am. This loss sucks. It's the Blazers. You shouldn't have beat the Blazers. You shouldn't have let the Blazers beat you. Words are difficult, even though I'm speaking them right now into your ears, or speakers, whatever. Anyways, all things considered for this game, it could have gone worse, right? It could have been a terrible blowout, considering how poorly the Rockets played for large stretches of this game. Now, they did have moments where they were more dialed in, and like the comeback to get the game tied up at 100, the really impressive bench play from the quote unquote do your job mob, as dubbed by Austin Rivers. There was some silver linings to this game, but on the whole, I'm not upset or worried, because I think there's some variables to consider about this game moving forward that won't be in existence against another opposing team, possibly, right? So the first things first is this is a team that has a lot more size than any team in the NBA, except for I think the Denver Nuggets might be the second tallest team in the NBA. The Portland Trailblazers are the tallest team in the NBA. They start 2 7-footers, and then they have Hassan Whiteside, another legitimate 7-footer, coming off the bench. And so for all 48 minutes, they are throwing consistent size at the Rockets. Now, is that the sole reason for the loss? No. Was it a factor? Yes. Secondly, this team is a team that is absolutely vying for their playoff livelihood. And I called this in the preview. I said if out of these 8 seeding games, I could see the Blazers being the trappiest trap game of the 8 seeding games, if only because they are the ones that are fighting to try and just make it into the playoffs. The Kings are as well, and so are the Spurs, but legitimately, I'm not as worried about those two teams, and I think Portland, just now that they have Nurkic back, had they not gotten Nurkic back, I feel like Portland, like, let's think back to all the time, all the commentary by Damian Lillard throughout the hiatus, like, oh, I don't want to, go to the bubble if I don't get to play the rest of the regular season and actually try to make it to the play. Like, he was crying the entire hiatus, and so because they got Nurkic back, because they have, they're roughly their full team, the key players. Yeah, they're missing Rodney Hood. Yeah, they're missing Trevor Ariza. But I don't consider those guys as nearly as important as Nurkic, for obvious reasons. So all that being said, they're really pushing for a playoff spot, and they have to. Their ability to continue the season depends on it. The Rockets, they don't have to do that. They've locked in their spot, and I spoke about this already. That being said, they still met the intensity of the Blazers for chunks of this game, and they largely played them almost dead even until that final, minute or two, whatever that run was the Blazers went on, that 7-0 run to close out the game, 10-2 over the final stretch. And I'll talk more about that in just a moment, but just, to quickly recap, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they both struggled a bit offensively in this one, not great nights from either of them, and largely for a team that is built around MVP caliber play from at least one of their two MVP, you know, guards. They didn't get either. They didn't get MVP play out of either of them. James Harden, just 23 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, had 4 turnovers, so he was the turnover prone one in this game. Russell Westbrook, just 15 points, 3 rebounds, which you've got to expect more out of him on the glass, especially as probably the best, you know, one of the best rebounders, if not the best rebounder on the team, who gets, you know, active minutes at least, especially from one of the guard spots. Nine assists, 2 steals, 1 block, had only 1 turnover in this one, so he was limiting the turnovers in this game. But, you know, he was 5 of 12 from the charity stripe, attempted 2 threes, missed both of them, and just 5 of 14 overall, and some questionable decision-making down the stretch of this one. So, you know, not a great game from him. Daniel House Jr., honestly, another really solid game, 17 points, 4 of 10 from behind the arc, doing all the little things it needs to do defensively, you know, being with it. And then Jeff Green, the rest of the bench mob, all had really strong games. I don't know why Austin Rivers only played 15 minutes in this one. Maybe it's a thing where he's still getting back up to speed conditioning-wise. I don't think that's the case, but with especially as how strongly he ran the team during the stretch where James Harden picked up his 5th foul and they had to rest Russell Westbrook, you know, for the third quarter, for the remainder of that quarter, Austin Rivers did a great job running the team and you know, being the primary ball handler, which is not usually his role. Usually he's just relegated to the secondary ball handler role, likewise with Eric Gordon when he's around, because there's always one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook on the court. So the bench guys all did a great job. 35 points off the bench, scored led the way by Jeff Green, who had 22 points, 6 boards, really solid night from him, 5 of 9 shooting from behind the arc. A little disappointed in Robert Covington, honestly, just 2 of 11 shooting, you know, and I've kind of hit on my major, just the statistical points here in this segment, but I want to dive into the deeper meaning behind some of those numbers and some of the frustrations throughout this game with certain plays, certain stretches of the game, and we'll get more on that in just a second after a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Say it with me now, sports are back. Look, I've been waiting for this day, for this moment since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind, MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime game-winning shot, all wrapped up into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's so easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season's even begun. But why would you stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA when you're signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are so simple. You bet, you win, they pay. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting about the unfortunate loss against the Portland Trail Blazers, 110-102, the Rockets' first loss in the Disney bubble. So, all right, so let's look at a couple things. First off, I do want to highlight I'll lead with this segment, is the 5th foul, the phantom foul on James Harden. This game largely felt very one-sided with the officiating. There were definitely some calls that probably could have gone Portland's way, but there were definitely some moments throughout this one where I was questioning the officiating, and I've already mentioned this in a recent episode, I said, look, I don't like to point to the officiating unless it is completely egregious. If it's a call that was like maybe a 50-50 call, or maybe even like a 60-40 call that could have gone one way or should have probably gone one way and just didn't, you know, fall into the Rockets' lap, I don't like to point at those, right? I want the players to play their best brand of basketball, but you can't play your best brand of basketball if you're being targeted by phantom foul calls and you're sitting on the bench for, you know, the majority of a portion of a game that you would normally play in. And so that's exactly what happened with James Harden. Picks up his fifth foul as Damian Lillard is driving towards the basket, and Harden does what he normally does, right? You know, when he's playing with foul trouble, he kind of leaned in close to Lillard, and then near the end of the drive, he did kind of, you know, pull his body completely away from Dame, but Dame just kept veering into Harden and then even pushed off of him a little bit with his offhand as he was shielding the ball with his left arm to then go up for the layup. And Harden gets whistled for a fifth foul on that. And that's just unbelievable. You know, that is not, you know, one, it was frustrating that it didn't get challenged. I don't know what was going on there through, you know, going on in MDA's mind. But all that being said, that threw off the entire rhythm of the game. Now, that's not the reason that they lost, if anything, because the bench unit being led by Austin Rivers was so productive in his time on the actual court. He was a plus three. Everybody else was a net negative across the entire evening, except for PJ Tucker, who is a plus zero. Austin Rivers managed to be a plus three in just his 15 minutes played because of how effective that group of guys was at keeping the pace going, at getting themselves back into the game. Some really productive bench minutes there. So all that being said, that kind of threw a wrench into the Rockets' usual game plan. But largely throughout this evening, you know, look, Harden didn't have a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. He had a non-Harden game. And when the team is built around Russ and or Harden to have monster nights each and every night for any chance for the team to win, when Harden has a night where he plays a little bit more like, you know, Clark Kent instead of Superman, or, you know, he turns into Bruce Wayne for a night instead of being Batman, whatever it may be, you know, suddenly the team looks a little bit effective. We'll go with that. I mean, he had 23 points on 7 of 17 shooting, 3 of 8 from behind the arc. It's not a phenomenal evening. It's not a bad night either. The four turnovers leave a little bit of something to be desired, but seriously, not a bad night from Harden. And honestly, not even a bad night from Westbrook, just a quiet night. And it was really just the issues at the free throw line were definitely a problem. It is, you know, Russ has to do better than 1 for 2 every trip, you know, to the line. And he did that against the Bucks. Credit where credit's due. Against the Bucks, he iced 4 free throws there, you know, in the fourth quarter after missing, you know, splitting the pair on his first trip to the line in that quarter. And that was great. But free throw shooting for a guard who gets to the line as much as he does, or as much as he should, needs to be a part of his game. And he had upped his free throw shooting for a large part of the season. And then unfortunately, just it, so far in the bubble, it's just completely fallen off a cliff. 5 of 12 from the free throw line for him. That's the game right there if you've got the lead in certain situations, because then you think back to the, you know, the final stretch, maybe certain plays are different, but the 5 of 14 shooting overall, not great. And really and this is the frustrating part, right, is Rockets had a chance to take the lead, and the shot that happened, the chance to take the lead, was a turnaround Russell Westbrook fadeaway, which is not the shot that you want to shoot in that situation. It's just not. And the decision-making has to be better from Russ. And so I'm not going to pin all the blame for this loss on him, and I'm not even going to pin, you know, a majority of it on him. He had some excellent, you know, plays defensively. He was active. He was aggressive going towards the rim. He just had a bit of an off night, you know, shooting the ball at the free throw line and just wasn't, you know, efficient. This was a game where they really prioritized getting shots to all their other players. Jeff Green had 15 shot attempts in this one. Covington had 11. Daniel Hus Jr. had 14 shot attempts. PJ Tucker with 7 shot attempts. Everybody was sharing the ball largely amongst each other. And person that I want to point a little bit more blame towards, honestly, is Robert Covington, who he has to shoot the ball better. You know, I'm sorry. 2 of 11 is just unacceptable for some of, you know, for how wide open some of these looks are. And it's one thing for PJ Tucker to have a really rough night shooting the ball, because PJ and Jeff Green and usually at times Harden are the three that are usually battling with the opposing bigs, like the legitimate fives from the other team that have like the weight on them. So the Nurkic's, the Whitesides, the Brook Lopez's, it's those three guys that are battling with them. Robert Covington is still switching onto them occasionally and still battling, yes, but he shouldn't be struggling with his shot this much, and he's only shooting 30%, just a hair under 30%, like 29 point something percent in the bubble so far. And that is just unacceptable shooting from a guy who is going to get so many wide open looks. And other teams are going to force the Rockets shooters to beat them. And apart from, you know, Westbrook's 0 for 2, PJ Tucker 2 of 6, it's acceptable. But the Covington 2 for 11 is just not great whatsoever. In fact, I didn't actually even do the math on what 2 for 11 actually means. Let's take a look at that. So 2 divided by 11. Yeah, 18% ain't going to cut the mustard in this one. So need more out of him from that standpoint. Have a bunch more points that I want to hit on from this one, so I might even go a little long in the final segment. But we'll get to that in just one moment. And we are back in here, final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, handful of thoughts. First is just, didn't feel like the Rockets really got out in transition in this one. It really felt like they largely settled for a lot of half-court offense in this one. And a lot of that, I don't know if it's necessarily all supposed to be on Russell Westbrook's shoulders to shoulder the load offensively in transition, at least, but that's what he thrives at, right? And I noticed a lot in this game, there were a lot of moments, a lot of points, and maybe it's a two-part thing, a little bit on Russ for not being as aggressive in transition, but also a bit on the Blazers for being good about getting back in transition. But there were a lot of points where Harden would kick the ball to Russ to then, like, to gun it in transition, and he just wouldn't, or he would like get all the way down to the other end of the court and kind of stop as the Blazers were getting their defense set, and then they would either like pull it back and then get into their half-court offense, whatever may have you. And those are just missed opportunities to try and capitalize on a defense that isn't set yet. And I don't, again, I don't want to point solely to that, because there were plenty of issues on the defensive side of the basketball that the Rockets had where they just weren't covering shooters. Look, I said that the Blazers are a team that can easily match you mathematically from behind the three-point arc, and the Rockets were still plus 21 from behind the arc, but they also gave up 44 points in the paint. And largely, the biggest issue on defense is, look, I mean, you got smacked on the rebounds again. What is it? Yeah, plus 25 differential on the rebounds. So they're going to get smacked on the boards every single night. But like we've already discussed, the math for the Rockets doesn't lie in, you know, the rebounding battle. They're going to lose that every night. It lies in how many turnovers you can force and then scoring off of those turnovers, ideally in transition. And they just didn't do that in this one. Look, the Rockets only had 10 turnovers, right? 10 turnovers for the night. That's not bad at all. That's great. You want to know how many turnovers the Blazers had? 12. You want to know how many points the Rockets scored off of those 12 turnovers? Only 9 points. That is not going to cut it. Especially when you have the Blazers, who got 13 second chance points in this one and largely just dominated the rebounding battle. So they had more second chance points. They were plus 4 in second chance points compared to the Rockets. They were minus 2 on points off turnovers. So largely they were plus 2 when you do the math there. So it's not like there was a huge differential, but that is the key for this team defensively, because you're not going to funnel them into the paint and prevent them from getting shots at the rim like the Bucks do. You're not really tightly contesting the three-point line. The Blazers shot almost 39% from behind the arc, 38.7, and they were getting some pretty clean looks, honestly. So the only way that you can effectively defend if you're this Rockets small ball group is to force turnovers, and that's where you have to capitalize, and they didn't do that enough. And even though they didn't do that, even though they missed a lot of open shots, even though they had all these things, all these negative things happen for them, and they did not play their best game of basketball, they were still right there at the tail end of the game with so many opportunities to take the lead. Because it wasn't just the Russell Westbrook turnaround jump shot, turnaround fadeaway that could have given them the lead, which would have been 102 to 100. They also had the chance to then take the lead off of a James Harden three-pointer, and he just didn't have it. And I think it's those moments where it hurts the most, because it never, at least to me, feels like there is a safe play down the stretch. And especially after the loss of Clint Capella, because let's face it, the James Harden Clint Capella pick and roll was a very safe play that became, you know, a safety net of sorts for James Harden to have that outlet pass to Capella as he was rolling, you know, driving to the rim. There isn't really a set play, I think, in the Rockets system that is just, you know what, we need a guaranteed bucket, here it is. And, or at least not a super high percentage one, because yeah, you've got Russ, you know, he can barrel to the rim, and but I don't know. And then James Harden's step back three, yeah, it's lethal, but you need a higher percentage shot than that at the tail end of the game. And that's where this team can be a little frustrating. Look, they shot, for the game, they shot 19 of 53, so 35.8% from behind the arc. That's a respectable three-point percentage. You know what they shot in the fourth quarter? 2 of 14 in the fourth quarter. So 2 of 14, again, I should have done all this math before the podcast, sorry. 14% from behind the arc in the fourth quarter. That's just not sustainable. So it's not necessarily that overall, yeah, because over the course of the game, yeah, they shot well. They shot a respectable percentage from behind the arc over the course of the game. But when the shots mattered the most in the fourth quarter, they just weren't hitting them. And there needs to be something else other than a James Harden step back three there at the end of the game to try and get points on the board. And the decision-making from Russell, the turnaround fadeaway, yeah, that shouldn't have been there. That should have been we should have gone for a higher percentage shot than what was given at that point. And it was the play before that he had just, you know, pulled the ball back and called timeout because, and given the team a chance to compose itself. So it's frustrating because in one moment he makes a great decision on the court and then the next it's a terrible decision. And then for James Harden, again, I know that, you know, that step back three is his bread and butter, but I would much rather see him try to be aggressive there and just take the ball to the rim, especially as the Blazers were in the penalty for most of the fourth quarter. I want to say it was the 7-minute mark. I think it was the 7-minute mark that they were whistled for their fourth foul in that quarter. And so the Rockets were in the penalty for the entire quarter. And when you're not hitting your free throw shots, when you're not being aggressive and going to the rim, it just, at that point, it won't matter. Let's see how many free throw attempts the Rockets had in the fourth quarter. I apologize. You know, there it is. We'll pull this up. All right. Free throw attempts in the fourth quarter, 7. And they went 3 for 7 at the line. You know, but when you're in the penalty for the entirety of a quarter, there's no reason for you not to have even more attempts than that. Because of those 7 attempts, you know, how many of those were taken advantage of after the actual penalty was in place? So the Rockets did not play their best game. They just didn't. They largely haven't played an entire game yet in the bubble, which is why I think there's a silver lining there, because this team's ceiling is so much higher than what we've seen so far. Against the Mavericks, they basically didn't play defense until the, you know, fourth quarter and overtime. And not even the fourth quarter. It was the like final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter in overtime where they really, you know, dialed in and started playing defense. Against the Bucks, they did not have a phenomenal offensive game. You know, they really won that game based on their defense. And then in this one, they were, you know, missing their foul shots. They weren't being as aggressive as they needed to be headed towards the rim. They were giving up some easier looks, and they just kind of broke down there at the very tail end, you know, allowing the offensive rebound out, allowing the kick out to Carmelo Anthony for the three. That was a, you know, 6-point swing right there, where the Rockets could have been up off of the James Harden three-pointer, 103-102. Instead, Carmelo Anthony comes back down, hits a three, pushes the lead to 105, and it's just, you know, a mess right there at the end of the game. So all things considered, nobody should be hitting the panic button. Nobody should be freaking out about anything. I do have one more point to make, and I harped about this during the game, but Ben McLemore needs to be utilized better in the time that he's on the court. And I say that because let's think back to when Gerald Green was, you know, so wonderfully a part of the Houston Rockets organization. We'll see you soon, Gerald. Just, you know, sit tight. Anyways, back when Green was a part of the organization, he was that microwave guy off the bench. He was the Ben McLemore role off the bench. And the Rockets never really played, unless there was an injury to report, there was never really sustained minutes for Gerald Green in the rotation. He played kind of that more ninth man role where he'd get, you know, niche minutes when they needed some shooting, some scoring, some instant offense, potentially off the bench. And one of the first things that they would do with Gerald is, you know, largely he would check into the game and they would almost immediately run a play or two for him where he would like curl off a screen near the top of the key or whatever and just immediately like catch the pass and turn and rise into a shooting motion and then bang. And sometimes that worked great. And you'd see Gerald jumping off the bench and he'd have three pointers, you know, in a matter of minutes off the bench. Ben McLemore spent 12 minutes in this game and only had one three-point attempt. That's just wasted possessions from him. And I know that right now he is the eighth man in the rotation, you know, off the bench with Eric Gordon missing. And so he's playing more minutes than he probably normally would in a regular game with Eric Gordon in the rotation. But that being said, you have to take advantage of your players and what they're good at when they're out there. If Ben McLemore is going to be on the court, there's no reason for them not to be running plays for them every other possession down the court, because he can run off screens. He can, you know, but having him just be out there and not even getting any shot attempts up is just a waste, because he's not going, at best, he is a net neutral on defense. At worst, he is a huge negative on defense. So if you have him out there and you're not even utilizing what he's good at offensively, it is a waste to have him on the court. And I would much rather see them run Damari Carroll or just literally anybody else out there if you're not going to take advantage of the one good thing that he brings to the team, which is his three-point shooting. The man is shooting over 40% from behind the arc. Get him shots. There is zero reason for him to have only attempted one three-pointer in 12 minutes of run. And even still, he wound up, you know, getting 4 3-point attempts across his 25 minutes. I would much, much rather see some of Robert Covington's attempts or Daniel House Jr.'s attempts or Tucker's attempts, whoever. Even take away some of Harden's attempts. Let Ben McLemore do what he does and shoot more. If Ben McLemore got 10 attempts a game and he kept shooting 40%, that's 4 3-pointers made a game. Like, I don't understand the logic in having him in the game and not using him offensively. That is going to be my rant to end this podcast, because, again, there's positives. The bench played really well. Harden and Westbrook did not have great, you know, stellar games like we're accustomed to from them, offensively at least. And the Rockets were still pretty much in it. And that's where the silver lining is they've been in all these games and we haven't seen them play a complete game yet. So all that being said, I think that's where I'm going to wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.